From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This from Boston. Massachusetts' Asian American population has grown tremendously in recent years, but political representation for Asians is disproportionately low. WBUR's Simone Rios has been reporting on this and what's at stake for Asian Americans electorally. Hi, Simone.
Hello, Arun.
So we've seen a big increase among a diversity of Asian groups in Massachusetts. Can you talk about the representation in the political system, what it's like?
Yeah, so it really is impressive. Asians have grown by 40% in Massachusetts over just the last decade. That's according to the latest census figures. But if you look at the state house, you know, there's 200 seats in the House and Senate, and you only have 9 elected officials who identify as Asian American, one in the Senate, Sonia Chang Diaz, and then 8 in the House. But there's hope that the coming elections will help change that.
And that number just seems so low, given what we know about the Asian population that we just talked about. But you reported there does seem to be some progress in terms of Asian representation.
That's right. And I would say the two highest profile politicians of Asian descent are Sonia Chang Diaz, who's running to be the next governor, and of course, Michelle Wu, who is running to be Boston's next mayor. Also, keep in mind the state's Asian population is very diverse, and considering how many newcomers there are, some observers say Massachusetts is actually doing pretty well in terms of political representation, that it's unique in having such a diverse array of elected officials, you know, coming from places like China, but also representing ancestry from Cambodia, Vietnam, and Japan.
And, you know, I don't know if it's something just about Boston politics, but I do kind of feel like Asians here, you know, like I'm honestly kind of excited, even though I'm Indian American, about Michelle Wu. And I sort of feel like it kind of transcends different Asian groups. But is it safe to say that Michelle Wu will get the overall Asian vote?
Well, the first thing we have to recognize, and you pointed this out, you know, Asians are not a monolith by any stretch. If you compare the politics of a Chinatown resident with somebody in Dorchester's Little Saigon, there's a good chance you're going to find some political differences based on what country they came from, what if they're a first generation or second generation or third or fourth generation immigrant. You know, and it reminded me as a Latino of what we hear about the differences between Cuban Americans and Mexican Americans. You often find they don't have a lot in common politically. Look at the Chinese Progressive Association's political arm, Chinese Progressive Political Action. They supported Kim Janey for mayor and not Michelle Wu. And they pointed out that most of Janey's support came from communities of color, and they wanted to be a part of that. But I spoke to Tuan Tran. He's a pharmacist in Dorchester's Little Saigon, originally from Vietnam, but he's been here 30-something years. He likes both Michelle Wu and Anissa Asaibi George, her opponent, for Boston's next mayor. He really wants the best candidate, regardless of their race, but he does happen to be leaning towards Michelle Wu.
As an Asian person, I'm proud, Michelle Wu qualified for that.
So that's a supporter of Michelle Wu. Did you speak with anybody who's supporting Anissa Asaibi George?
Yes, there are a number of prominent Asian Americans who are supporting Anissa's campaign. One group is AAPI Action Group. They came out strongly in favor of Anissa. They're made up mainly of middle class community and business leaders. And they say Michelle Wu does not represent them, either in the policies she's promoting or because she's disagreed with them on certain issues. Let's hear from AAPI Action Group's Betty Lim King.
She's not from Boston, and Anissa is. Anissa is mature. She has 14 years, Boston public school teacher, and she's more grounded, not pie in the sky, if you know what I mean.
So there's certainly not consensus among everybody in the Asian community, but representation is also a factor that matters to some voters, and I guess if we could say this in a simple line, Simone, wouldn't be having this conversation with you. Simone, thank you.
Thank you, Arun. Good to be here.
That's WBUR's Simone Rios. Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. Transit advocates are calling for urgent action after Tuesday's Red Line derailment in Boston. The latest accident comes after a crash on the Green Line this summer, and last weekend a station escalator malfunctioned, sending multiple people to the hospital. Jared Johnson of Transit Matters says the series of missteps indicates the MBTA needs a new oversight board.
The governor needs to appoint a board. It's been 3 months since the T has had a board, and I think more than ever, it's time to have a group of folks that are just specifically focused on the MBTA.
Johnson says the transit agency needs both more funding and a comprehensive plan to address safety issues in order to restore confidence in the system. Meanwhile, the number of homicides in Boston is down so far this year. That's according to new data from the Boston Police Department. The BPD says the city has seen 32 homicides thus far in 2021. That's compared to 45 at the same time last year. The decline is a welcome break from the recent rise in violent deaths in Boston and across the country. Shay Cronin is a criminal justice professor at Boston University Metropolitan College. He says the new numbers could mark the start of a positive trend.
This is a good sign where we're at now, and hopefully we can continue the work to drive violence down in the city.
Total crime in Boston dropped by 5% last year compared to the year before. In other news, the multi-billion-dollar settlement with Purdue Pharma and its owners, the Sackler family, for their role in the opioid crisis has generated a lot of controversy. One local family among the 138,000 people who sued Purdue Pharma is raising another issue, the value assigned to their son's life in the settlement. The maximum award for Jeff Wences' overdose death has been set at roughly $40,000. After legal fees and outstanding medical bills are paid, Jeff's family from Wrentham won't get much. Still, Lynn Wences voted for the settlement, which gives more than 90% of the funds to government entities that sued Purdue.
It's a slap in the face, but the most important thing is that we get money out into the states for treatment.
Payouts depend on whether the settlement survives the appeals process, which is just beginning. And finally, Lowell officials are working with conservation groups trying to save the city's last farm. The Lowell Parks and Conservation Trust, along with Mass Audubon and Mill City Grows, are looking for $1.5 million in community preservation funds from the state to buy Raleigh's farm. Lowell City Councilor Rodney Elliott says this is the final year the farm will produce vegetables.
For 2 more years, they'll continue to harvest Christmas trees. And then after that, the sale will be transferred to the city and partners. And the plan is to create educational programs, nature walk, trails.
Elliott says Community Preservation Act funding was created exactly for this type of project. He says some of the farm has already been developed for housing. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since farms and funds, I'm Arun Roth. Be well. Hey, before you go, you like podcasts. Here's one more I'm pretty sure you'll like. All Revved Up. Join hosts and reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price as they explore the intersection of faith, politics, and culture. New episodes of All Revved Up drop every other Wednesday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.